Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. Very excited today. You recognize this music, I'm sure. Well, it's an annual tradition here at the Rossi home to watch these peanut specials, and we just watched the Thanksgiving special. And I was sitting there watching it, and I said to my family, I want to have someone on that's been one of the Charlie Brown kids. I love the Peanuts so much. Such a great spiritual message they give us at Thanksgiving, Christmas time. And so we're very honored to have the lovely actress, author, who was the voice of Sally Brown, Charlie Brown's little sister. So we will be back with Hillary Momberger in 20 seconds to talk about her journey from Peanuts to where she is today. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hillary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you, Richard?
Wonderful. We're so honored to have you here. Thanks for making our Thanksgiving as well as other times of our life wonderful with your portrayal of Sally. What were some of the favorites? I know you were in a half dozen of the Peanuts specials. Mm-hmm. What were the ones that you liked the most?
Well, my favorite one, I mean, I love the Thanksgiving special only because it is my favorite time of year. And, you know, as a kid, when I was doing it, it was very interesting because I never got to meet any of the other characters.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go in individually, and I had, you know, Bill Melendez was such a great guy. I would sit on his lap and twist his mustache, and he'd tell me what to say, and I didn't really understand what was, you know, how important being a peanut character was, because at the end of it, my brothers and sisters, I had seven brothers and sisters, and
wow,
we would all get excited to watch the specials because I didn't know any of the other characters. So I got to meet them, seeing them on television and hearing
wow
their voices.
So you did one-on-one. Were you like in a sound booth with the director, Bill Melendez, and did, so you weren't memorizing a script? Was he kind of telling you what to say and then you said it into the mic?
Yeah, I did that when I also did it with Charles Schulz. It was actually really cool. I mean,
mm-hmm,
they would give me the inflections, and, you know, I take direction really well, which is a good thing, being an actor.
So it was, I wondered about that. So it's because it's so well acted, you did such a good job. So, but as a kid, you know, you're not an adult where you're getting into all the subtext and you don't know the other characters. You're not reading off the other kids. So they gave you, I guess, what we'd call a line reading where you mimicked how they said it?
Yeah, I mean, they would say, can you say this? And I'd say it. And it was just fun. Like, I was having fun with these adults that treated me like I was a person. And it was play. Like, I'd show up every day.
That's
and
wonderful.
It was play. It was exciting. I couldn't wait to go down there. It was every single thing that came. My mother would pick me up from school,
mm-hmm,
and then we'd stop and we'd get a Carl's Jr. hamburger. So there was this whole ritual. And then
that
I'd
sounds
go
so
and,
fun.
It was great. And then I meet, you know, Bill and Charles Schulz, and we'd have candy, and he'd give me licorice. And, I mean, what kid didn't love showing up and being praised for a day? And then I'd go back home and be one of seven. So it was just kind of like a cool outing.
It's really, really interesting how this whole process happened. So I guess did you, your parents, your mother see a casting notice and then take you down? Is that how, it was a standard audition type of thing like that?
Well, as a child, my mother was a model in New York City, and she was also a Jackie Gleason girl. So she was had a little preview of the world. So when I lived in Chicago until I was around 3 years old, and my mother, when we moved out to California, thought, I want to get the kids an agent. So the four children, there was four of us at the time, we got an agent, and actually the Peanuts character was my first audition.
Whoa.
So,
now,
yeah,
you're like a person that hits
on.
A home, you hit a home run on your
first
at-bat in the major leagues. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it was just fun. Like, I didn't see myself as, I want to be a star, I want to be something. It was just a fun thing for a kid to do. Like, I'm a people person, so I love meeting people. And even as a child, I mean, I'm so much like the character. Like, I'm just a friendly girl that kind of talks and says what's on her mind. And I was in love with my brother. I mean, it was very, very serendipitous how it was so much like my brother and I's relationship. And it was very interesting. I mean, looking in hindsight, I thought, wow, this was so perfectly designed for me.
Wow. Well, you were so good in it, and we enjoyed the holiday specials as well as a feature.
Mm-hmm.
You were in some of the features. I remember as a little boy going to see Snoopy Come Home and being in the theater and Snoopy running into all those No Dogs Allowed signs. And so did you go to the theater and see it in the theater, one of the longer ones?
We actually went to the screening. I got to go with all my brothers and sisters. And, you know, it was kind of funny because I was always a little embarrassed, you know. I was, you know, there's a part of me that's incredibly shy. So when we went to this theater, we went with my brothers and sisters, and we all got our own full row. And when we saw it, like I said, I had never, I would meet them in passing in the halls. But I never really got to meet them in person, and this was the first time I got to. So it was just as exciting for me to see the movie as it was for everyone in the audience, because I also got to meet the characters.
I imagine, I was curious, you know, I started playing in clubs as a kid on the guitar and was on TV about 9 years old. And, you know, some kids were, like, really cool and giving me props, like, well, I saw you on TV. But, you know, there's also that jealousy factor, and kids will find something to tease. How were you with, you know, just being a normal girl? Is it something that, you know, you got a lot of positive attention from peers, or were you worried they'd tease you? Or, you know, what was it like growing up being connected to this?
Well, I think it was more, you know, kids at school used to say, oh, didn't I see you on that commercial? Because I did probably 60, 65 commercials, and I did I did a Buddy Greco after school, Valentine's Day special 2 years in a row. And I, you know, I did for print work for Bullock's, and I guess it was Robinson's back then, many moons ago. So I was in, you know, catalog magazines. But they would come up to me and say, weren't you that girl? And there were times that it wasn't so much a shame as just wanting to be a part of. I would say, no, that was my sister. And I also wanted my brothers and sisters to get some kudos, too, because I didn't want to be treated differently. I did want to just be a kid, you know, and I liked being the class clown and the funny girl. And, the, you know, and my brothers and sisters thought that I was lucky because I got to hang out with my mom, and that's a different story. There was a whole attachment there, which I have in my book. It wasn't a pretty thing, but so I didn't want to claim it all. So when I was in my 30s and I started getting some acknowledgement for it, it was the first time that I was able to say, wow, I actually did that. That is me. So I got
well, we look forward to your book. You mentioned your book, and it's not out yet, but we'll have you back on again when it
so
comes out. But tell us the title, and tell us your book. It's kind of really your journey from child star to where you're at today, huh?
Yes, it is. It's called Peanuts to Percocet, and it kind of gives you a preview of what that's about. It's growing up in a family where I was the pretty much the prodigal child, and I had a mother who was a narcissist and who expected a lot out of me. And it's about being the perfect kid and realizing that everything that I had ever gotten, I was not allowed to keep. And it's me coming back to owning and claiming what belongs to me, which is pretty much self-esteem. I have a great relationship with God. I have you know, I mentor women, and it's just all this stuff that I had to get to and go through to get me to where I'm at today, which I have a pretty awesome life.
So I guess with a narcissistic parent, they say that there's these different roles, and sometimes one in this family of all these siblings is the hero, the one trying to be so perfect, and that's a lot of pressure. Did you feel like no matter what you did, it wasn't good enough, or what was it, that perfectionism, how did it affect you?
That was my mother. No matter what I did, it was, you're doing this because of me. You'd never have looks if it weren't for me. So I got a lot of messages. You'll never be as talented as me. That's the narcissist. And so when I had made all this money as a child, when I turned 18 years old, there wasn't a dime left for me. Because she said it's because of her that I had gotten anywhere. So I have had it's been a lot of work to unlearn and relearn some different things. And I have to, you know, I've been sober many, many years in a program. I don't know if I should say it, but, and I have had some really great spiritual experiences that have shown me that everything I learned was not of God. It was of man, my mother, and I'm able to let those go. So it was there was a lot of stuff. I mean, from being left on the freeway because I didn't make an audition, from, you know, getting beaten for not booking a job. So, you know, the bar, I have had to lower my own personal bar a lot because the expectations I put on myself have been horrific. But, you know, as I said, I mean, from therapy to, you know, having a spiritual life and to having a great program, you know, there's been a lot of healing that's taken place.
Wow.
And it's been my thing to help another human being go through some healing. I mean, we all have stuff happen to us. But just because
you're so blessed to have this, you know, second chance, you know.
My God, I have the best life ever.
I was thinking about, like, someone like, I remember watching an interview with Michael Jackson and how he was beat as a kid if he didn't perform well. And I remember that experience I had. I was playing rhythm guitar in a band with everyone that was adults, and I was a kid, and I lost the rhythm. And I remember having that same experience as you and he, getting beat because you didn't perform well. But then, you know, I saw how Michael ended up, and I thought, wow, you know, we are fortunate, aren't we, that we got into recovery, we got into healing, we got into counseling, we got into, you know, dealing with it, and that we're still here, you know, and healthier now. Wow, are we fortunate. And you now have a chance to redo, another chance at everything. You're getting back to your acting. Tell us, you're getting back to your acting, aren't you?
Well, I'm 100%. I mean, I just feel like it's my bookend. And I started out in the beginning, and I was just really, really fortunate. I just think when things are supposed to happen, they happen. So as a child, I booked everything, almost everything I went on. And it left a really bad taste in my mouth. So over the years, I ended up quitting when I was 12. Good girl became bad. You know, I'm your classic California girl, stealing cars, robbery, you know, that's me. And I ended up dropping out of high school and getting into a nursing college, and got my LBM license and went to art school and then went to UCLA for film. And I took a course in script supervisor and always went behind the scene, never in front of the camera, because it scared me and because there was a lot of memories attached to it. So I've been doing my craft, continuity, for 27 years. And in the last 2 years, I feel as if, my gut tells me every day, it's time. So this next year, I'm finishing up. I'm working on a great show called Code Black right now. And when I finish up in January, I'm going to go 100% back in. I have an agent. I have a theatrical agent. I've booked a few commercials in the last couple weeks and a TV show. And I just feel excited about all the possibilities. Yeah.
Wow,
it
is
like
a wonderful full circle, isn't it? It's like that
T.S.
Eliot quote
cool.
that you come back full circle to where you started, but you know it in a whole new way.
Yeah, it's. I feel very, very, very lucky that I'm awake. I think that's the word, is I'm 100% awake. And I'm
and
not
now
a victim
you get
of
to
what's
be that
happening.
Parent. You can be that healthy parent now to your
oh.
little girl inside, and now you're not getting beat if you don't get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You can affirm
mm-hmm.
yourself if you don't get a job and say, hey,
mm-hmm.
the ones I'm meant to get, I get, and
mm-hmm.
God is with me, and you can almost reparent
yeah.
yourself now this second time in the process, huh?
Yeah, I feel that's where the excitement comes in. Like I'm really tapping into the childlike side of me. The child, I don't want to let that go, and I buried it for a long time. And now that I'm allowing her to come out, there's no stopping me. You know, I'm
wow,
trained.
This is very
I've watched some of the greatest actors in their process. I feel like, wow, what a great environment for me to learn.
Yeah.
Nothing's been wasted. It's all been a part of the whole soup that's being made. So.
What would you say if you were, let's say we time travel and
mm-hmm.
we go back to, you know, the Peanut Studio on Sunset, and
mm-hmm.
you saw little Hillary, and maybe mom or maybe someone wasn't real nice to her, or she was a little stressed or whatever. What would you say to that 9-year-old Hillary if you were her mom right now or you saw her again? What would you tell her?
I would tell her just... go have fun. Just have fun. It doesn't matter if you get it or not. Let's just have some fun.
Mm.
I think
wow.
I would just tell her to enjoy herself, have fun, and go meet some fun people.
That sounds like a good thing to tell Hillary now and all the
yeah.
actors listening. We have a lot of actors listening. Now, those of you listening can see Hillary this year is... she starts to act more and more, and this is, you know, just tomorrow you can see her. You're doing a play tomorrow with
I'm doing a
gifted
play
comic, Andy Dix plays. Tell us
yes.
about that.
Well, I did a play last year with his daughter, Meg Dick, and
mm-hmm.
So they have a playhouse called Dick's Playhouse, which is in Hollywood. And they have a 24-hour play where we go in at noon, we write it, we rehearse it, and we perform it from 8 to 11 tomorrow night. So it should
that
be a lot
is
of fun.
Exciting.
I know. It's fun. I'm looking forward to it. Once again, I'm going in with the attitude, this is so fun, I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to play tomorrow.
Mm.
Basically play and just enjoy myself and see if I can add to someone else's life. I mean, that's always been my motto. What can I add to someone else's world? May it be a smile, an encouragement, a positive attitude, a word of wisdom. You know, that's kind of my motto. How can I add to someone's life? So I try to go into every situation, especially with work, and I'll do it tomorrow. I have a call back at 2:15 today, so that'll be exciting for a commercial. So once I made a decision, it's funny how it keeps coming all. It just keeps coming towards me, so I'm rolling with it. I'm accepting.
All these years
you've
been a script supervisor all these years on, you know, so many, you know, varied projects. Grey's Anatomy
mm-hmm.
and Kevin Smith films and being John Malkovich,
mm-hmm.
Spider-Man 3, all these different credits.
Mm-hmm.
What it's interesting now you have that behind the camera, watching for continuity and all that. That is really serves you now acting because
oh my God,
you know
no
you're
idea.
So aware
it's
of that
so
stuff because you know even the best actors mess up with that kind of stuff all the time with the continuity and things like that.
Oh,
but what have you learned as a script supervisor that serves you now as an actor?
Well, what's really kind of interesting in the last year since I've been doing stuff, it's so secondhand for me to go, oh, it's in my right hand. I've got to stand in the light. I got to hit the mark because I see it all from the other side. I've heard
mm-hmm.
every criticism from every director and all those who sit behind the monitor. So I'm very aware of what they want and what they don't want. It's not like when I get in front of the camera, I'll be somebody. I already feel like somebody.
Mm.
So it's just me moving positions in the world that I'm been exposed to my whole life. So it's very natural for me to be in front of it. And it's very natural for me to be in the world. I feel comfortable around the DP and the gaffer and the makeup department because these are my friends. So it's very, it's a very interesting switchover. I have a friend I write with. We've written a couple screenplays in the last year. And he wrote a short film a couple days ago and said, hey, let's shoot it in February. So I've already lined up the crew, and Louis Gutzman wants to be in it with me. And, I mean, it's like, well, how fun. I get to play.
I can't wait to see it. Let us know later in 2017 whenever it's edited and you're screening it, or we can go see it. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
And what kind of part are you playing in it?
A 50-year-old woman who's back in the game, and it's about dating somebody who basically trades me in for someone younger, and I meet this Louis Gutzman character who kind of defends me, and I realize the nice guy's the one who wins. The one with the heart wins.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a really wonderful story.
It's a really sweet piece. It's, you know, and it's called Hope. So it's a nice, happy piece. And we'll shop it at the film festivals and do the YouTube route, and we'll see what happens. Whatever God's got in store, I'm ready for it.
Well, we can't wait to see that. What are some roles? I know you're just open to God and whatever comes, but what type of parts do you think you'd really love to sink your teeth into?
I would love to be a regular on a TV show. May it be a drama or a comedy, comma drama. I'd love to be either because I like doing both. But you know, there's a lot of history that I've had, so I have a lot to draw from to go for the deep stuff. Like I can tap into that in a second. So I'm open to either, but I definitely like comedy's fun. It's so fun, timing of it.
You can do both, because sometimes if it's too heavy, we need those moments of laughing. Like Hitchcock said, when he does even a thriller, a psycho type of film, he makes sure he had at least three laughs because the audience can't handle something heavy, you know,
for
2 hours
too
straight.
Much. We'll pass out razor blades at the end of the show.
Yeah,
nothing too heavy. You got to have a little. Well, you know, comedy is pretty tragic, and tragedy is pretty funny. So.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's for my favorite coping mechanism for anything bad that's happened in life is I make a sick joke about it, and you know, an inappropriate joke that about things you shouldn't joke with, and you know,
politically incorrect.
Yeah, I've had friends that have been a lot of you know, some of the legendary Jewish comics, and they told me, you know, this is where our comedy comes from. We had to get through the Holocaust, so we find laughs in the sickest of things, you know.
Right. Yeah. You got to find the pony in the horseshit, as they say.
Yeah.
exactly.
Charles Schulz, what a genius. What are your memories of Charles Schulz? And did you happen to, you know, it was interesting. I don't know if I should even bring it up, but I was fascinated that it seems like every artist has their dark night of the soul or even their dark side. There was a bio about how everything wasn't so perfect in his life. But what a beautiful heart, though, and what he gave the world. What are your reflections on Charles Schulz?
Well, I met him quite a few times, and he was just a very gentle, quiet man. He was, you know, a gentle, quiet man. And it's funny because all the character, he brought in most of the kids that were Peppermint Patty and Charlie Brown and such, were all neighborhood children in his neighborhood.
Is that right?
He got them all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then
I think he
was
Sally. up in Northern California?
Yeah, he was up in
Northern
California. And so the only character that they hadn't cast was Sally. So when I ended up getting it, I'm looking back because I did a Comic-Con about 5 years ago, and I got to meet Charlie Brown and Lucy and Peppermint Patty, and it's funny because they're all from very heavy lives also.
Mm-hmm.
And so their lightness of being comes from those dark, those heavy times. So he brought in everybody that reflected him, I believe.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, we bring in what we are, as they say.
I don't know if it was the one you worked with, but I'd read, and I hate to bring up negative things, but I'd read that one of the guys that was Charlie Brown went, had a incident with being arrested over an incident with a girlfriend.
I know, my
so,
brother sent me the little, my son's brother sent me a text and said, are you going to bail your brother out of jail?
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully
I'm like, what
he's
are you
out
talking
now.
About? He goes, Charlie got arrested today for stalking.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I haven't kept
nope.
up with it, but hopefully he's okay now. I don't know how it is today, but that was.
I hope so.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Yeah.
We all have our crosses to bear, as they say.
Yeah, and I think every creative person I've met, we all have our skeletons, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Some
yeah.
of us have more skeletons than the Charlie Brown Halloween special had, so. But,
exactly.
You know, God brings the greatest messages sometimes out of a mess, and, you know,
oh,
and then learning from that mess.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I came about to write my book. I kept saying, God, why do I keep going through this? Why did I go through this? And I didn't put this in my book, but I had a really tumultuous relationship with my mother, and I had a spiritual guide said to me, until I forgive my mother, my life is not going to blossom.
Wow.
And I'd always used my anger as an energy for me to get jobs and to, you know, bully my way through and not be a victim again. But in fact,
mm-hmm.
I kept repeating my pattern over. And so I wrote in an inventory, which I know you're accustomed to. And
mm-hmm.
I lived in Santa Monica at the time, and I took my notebook with everything that I had written to my mother that I had done in response to her anger. Because, you know, every time she had done something, I did something just as horrific to justify it. So I had gone underneath PCH, and I, because there's like a tunnel, and I walked out to the beach, and I sat down, and me and God and my mom, and because her ashes were out there on Will Rogers Beach, and I told my, you know, I said, Mom, I know that if you weren't mentally ill or had alcoholism, you wouldn't have done the stuff that you did to me. You wouldn't have hurt me. You wouldn't have left me on the freeway and taken my money. And I kind of got into a space where I know she didn't do it on purpose. Something was wrong because a parent does not do that to a child.
Mm-hmm.
And after about an hour of me confessing what I had done in return and retaliation, I felt a lightness on my back and my being, and I just
wow.
thought, wow. So this is what this is about. And I walked back underneath the freeway, and God is my witness on this. Someone, during the time that I had been making amends and forgiving my mother, had written in spray paint in this tunnel, it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
Someone wrote that in the tunnel. Wow.
Yeah, in the tunnel, in gold spray paint. And I looked at that, and I thought, okay, there's my message. Now I can have a different perception of where I grew up. So now I see my mother as perfect. She was wonderful. I'm strong. I'm funny. I've got looks. I've got tenacity. I know how to talk to people. I'm not afraid. These are all things she taught me by neglect, by love, her way of loving. I don't know what that means, but, you know, if it wasn't because for where I came from, I wouldn't be where I'm at. And I just, you know, there are days I go, wow, I really am. Thank you, God, for helping me be an asset to this community. How can I be of service? What can I do next? How can I play next? And I try to bring that in my work. You know, I have a great work ethic. I'm a hard worker. Thank you, Mom. She taught me that, you know. So it's been, my life has turned into a really great experience because my perception has changed so greatly.
Well, I really have chills that I know this show is helping people listening that have had a dysfunctional or mentally ill parent or abuse, and also getting chills at the parallel lives. My dad was bipolar and in and out of mental hospitals,
mm-hmm.
and but yet, you know, got me into performing professionally and taught me guitar and things, but I had a similar experience, and amazingly also down at the beach there, Santa Monica, I had an acting teacher.
What about Santa Monica?
Yeah, I had an acting teacher, Milton Casales, who's since passed, but I always had difficulty accessing crying in certain scenes, and he had an assignment that and said, write a letter to your dad and tell him everything
mm-hmm.
you couldn't tell him, and this was when my dad was older, and but you won't have to give it to him. He lied to me and said, you won't have to give it to him. So I told him, I wish you could have said, you know, I love you. I wish you could have supported me in my creative calling. I wish I wrote all this stuff. And you know, let's put all the past behind and forgive each other with the time that's left. I poured out this whole thing. And then he said, now I want you to mail it to your dad, who was living back east. And I thought, you liar. There's no way. You told me, you know, I didn't have to do that. And I sent it to my dad. And any time I talked to him since, I couldn't even bring it up. And then finally I got the courage to bring it up, and I said, did you see that letter? And he said, yeah, I have it in my wallet. I read that about 30 times a day. Mm. And I'm from an Italian family, and he took it to the godfather, mafiosa person that we all respected as the big guy. And he showed him that letter, and he said, Richard's truly become a man to be able to say this to you. And then once I forgave him, the last part of Bill Casale's assignment was to rip up write a list of all the wrongs from my father's mental illness that he'd done to me, write it all out, rip it up into tiny pieces and throw it in the ocean, which I did at Santa Monica. And like you, I got a message there too. There was a verse from the Bible that popped in my head driving there, which was about don't let your light be hidden under the bushel. You know, let your light shine from the highest hill. And as I heard the voice in my head, I saw the hills of Hollywood and the light, and that I can now express myself as an artist free from all that stuff from the past.
Yeah.
And then when I went to the beach, there was a scrap of paper at my feet, and I picked it up, and it was, you know, printed out that verse.
Wow.
And so I'm sitting here listening to you and thinking, oh, my God, you know, God has some similar bag, you know, a similar bag of tricks, because we both had to go to the beach and let go of a lot of this stuff and get the message.
Yeah, we got to. How lucky are we?
Yeah.
We're really
I don't want to hold you. I know you have a callback and
I
a break a leg on that. And you bring a lot of love and power into the room, and they're very fortunate to have you coming back there for that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this call. I thank you for inviting me. It really means a lot. I really appreciate it, Richard.
Well, any final words of how people...
to encourage somebody? I'm sorry,
yeah.
What were you saying?
Oh, any final words to the listeners and how they can keep up with you, or just some final thoughts?
Well, you can always see me on Facebook.
Okay.
I am going to start posting stuff that I'm accomplishing. I'm with Lovestone Agency, theatrical and commercial. And I don't know. Hopefully you'll see me a lot more.
We sure will. We sure will. I have a feeling that the best is yet to come for you. And that...
lips to God's ears, as they say.
Yeah, and maybe now is the reason why your book's coming out now, is it's the third act in the screenplay structure. You always have that third act where everything gets resolved in an amazing way. And so I think you're committing back to your acting. It's like the third act of your story.
Yeah, it's a great thing, and it's also going, oh, really? I'm in my third act? How did that happen? Damn, that was quick.
Well, yeah. It's going to be a good long third act.
Good. I look forward to that. I'm pretty excited. I'm grateful and excited in the same breath.
Well, wonderful. And we've been so honored to have you. Thank you so much for coming on.
All right. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I hope to see you and talk to you soon.
Okay. We will, Hillary. Bless you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bless you. Bye, hon.
And thank you to all of you for listening. And as we have this wonderful season coming up, let's remember, like Peanuts taught us, to remember the true meaning of Thanksgiving, the true meaning of Christmas. As Linus got up and read that passage from Luke 2 about peace and goodwill toward men, unto us is born a Savior, in the middle of all the commercialism, keep connected to God and what it's all about. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll be back again soon.